Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu. Two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Paraskevopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Welcome, everybody, to The Fighting Priests. And again, Happy New Year to everybody. I know this is our second episode in the new year, our 22nd episode in 2021. My name is Father Ted, and I'm here with my co-host, Father Thomas Sandberg, up in Niverville, Manitoba. Father Thomas, Happy New Year, man.
Happy New Year to you as well.
And with us today, we have another special guest, again from the United States. It seems like we just keep getting all these guests from the United States, and I don't know where everybody, all the jiu-jitsu orthodox people in Canada are, but today we have a priest in under the Antiochian Orthodox Church in Fort Wayne, Indiana. His name is Father Michael Sacrin, and I think I'm pronouncing that right, Sacrin.
And
he is at St. Nicholas Antiochian Orthodox Church in Fort Wayne. Yes?
St. John Chrysostom.
St. John Chrysostom, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I don't know why I had written down St. Nicholas. Maybe it was my...
We got a St. Nicholas here, but that's not ours.
Well, there you go. Sorry about that, Father. My home parish was St. Nicholas. Maybe that's what I had in my mind when I was typing it out.
It's okay.
But thank you for coming on the podcast. We welcome you to The Fighting Priests.
Thanks for having me, Fathers. Glad to do it.
Wonderful. How is everything? I know we were just talking about it before we started recording, but like, how is everything with the whole pandemic down in Indiana?
Yeah, I mean, we're surviving kind of in the same boat as everybody else. You know, we go through surges up and down, but, you know, they got the vaccine coming out and hopefully it starts to kind of produce a downtrend in the coming months. So, you know, we're hanging in there.
Are the clubs open?
Somewhat. I mean, we're open kind of on a limited basis. We're doing private lessons right now, and I think they got a couple of small groups, and it's the same people training each time, and, you know, they keep it clean. They're running temp checks and that kind of thing as best they can. So, but I don't think any, like, widespread large group classes or anything like that are going on yet.
Okay. Any dummy work, like sparring dummies and stuff like that, or no?
A little bit, you know. I think kind of just, there's some people training privately and they, you know, out of their homes, and maybe they're doing like an open mat, but just with like one or two people, that sort of thing. But yeah, that's about it.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Father Thomas, how's it going? I know you're full lockdown up in Niverville, right?
Yep. We have the strictest lockdown in Canada right now, currently. But the order is set to expire on Friday. So hopefully it actually does not get extended or something like that. So we'll see.
Well, by the time this airs, which will be like a few weeks from now, hopefully you won't have any lockdown, but we never know.
Yeah, you never know.
We always say that, right? Like, we went through the summer and things got lifted and things opened up, and now we're back in the, here in Toronto too, we're in the gray zone, what it's called. So it's like pretty much the strictest lockdown, almost like it was the first time around in March, back in March. So yeah, we're closed too. The gyms are closed. The academies are closed. Like what Father Michael was saying, we have, some of us are rolling out of our basements or like, you know, any private facilities that we have with our, like, you know, one or two people of our own, you know, social circle. But unfortunately we don't have anything open here either. So there's no privates and there's no anything like that. So it's a shame, but, we're doing the best we can. Yeah. Well, today we are looking at a topic that, even though, you know, the holidays have kind of come and gone, you know, we went through Christmas, we've already gone through Epiphany season, and now we are kind of like winding down from those seasons. And I guess the next big thing will be looking towards the spring and Lent and all that kind of stuff. But as we have just gone through this massive kind of nativity fasting season and then the Feast of Nativity, and again, the same thing with Epiphany. Today, we wanted to discuss the importance of preparation, both in the spiritual life and the Orthodox faith, and also in jiu-jitsu, right? Because as we've discussed, at least with Father Thomas before, we've discussed how important it is to prepare when one is, for example, getting ready for a competition. And maybe we can even discuss that a little bit. But just generally speaking, the importance of preparing ourselves either for competitions or even just for rolling, just for physical activity in jiu-jitsu, and also the importance of preparing ourselves for the great feast, because as we know in the Orthodox faith, we have this kind of rhythm, this cycle of, you know, fasting and feasting, you know, preparation, and then, enjoying the time that we were preparing for. And we thought that this would be a wonderful topic to discuss with Father Michael. And we look forward to the conversation.
Thanks for being with us today, Father Michael. Glad to have you. So could you maybe speak to me a little bit about what your Orthodox background? Are you cradle Orthodox? Are you convert?
Yeah, no, I'm cradle Orthodox. So I was baptized as a child and in the Antiochian Archdiocese, and I wasn't always active in my faith. I really kind of rediscovered it in my early 20s, but cradle Orthodox for all intents and purposes.
Okay. I kind of thought about it last time. I wasn't sure. So you are Antiochian?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I see. So why don't you tell me about that? So you kind of rediscovered the faith in your 20s? Or
Yeah. So like, I was baptized, like, I remember my baptism, which is weird for cradle Orthodox. I was just before I was 5 years old. So, and then we were like kind of these, Christmas and Easter and Palm Sunday sort of families, you know, like that. And then I kind of grew up like that. So I had a belief in God, but never really practiced my faith. Mm-hmm. And then in my 20s, I had an experience. I had joined the military. I was in the U.S. Marines for a couple of years. This is like in 98, 99, 2000, that era. And when I got out of the military, I was still in the reserves. And that's when the war in Iraq was starting to gear up. Mm-hmm. And I got a letter from the Marine Reserve headquarters in my town recalling me. I thought they were calling me back to active duty to go fight. And so I kind of said a prayer that night. I said, God, if you get me out of this, because I don't want to go to war. Yeah. I'm going to give my life to you. And sure enough, like it panned out. Like I didn't have to go overseas, and I started going back to church after that. So it was kind of like a conversion experience, a reconversion.
Wow. Yeah.
And from there, I just fell in love with the church. You know, it was like a treasure that I never saw before. And I just immersed myself in it. And, you know, here I am a priest all these years later.
Crazy. What, how'd you just say it? It's a treasure that you didn't.
Yeah. It's like, you know, I had been in my church so many times before, yeah. St. George in Houston. And when I came and saw it again, like after that experience, yeah. it was like new to me, even though I'd been in there, you know, X number of times before.
Yeah, that's the way, for me as a convert, that's the way I always looked at the Orthodox Church. And then when you, as you become enculturated, you know, in the life of a parish, and you meet people who are, you know, Christmas and Easter, but so to me, it's like you have this pearl of great price, your whole life that you've been given by your grandparents, your great grandparents, whatever, yeah. And you've done nothing with it. So it's like to hear that story of yours, I think that's amazing,
because it was amazing
too.
Yeah, I remember I was talking to an older priest, you know, a couple of years ago, and he asked me where my family was from. My father is from Nazareth in Palestine, actually, which, you know, the Lord's hometown. And he said, you know, Father Michael, if that you have, might have generations of Christians in your family all the way back to the Lord. And if that doesn't send chills down your spine, I don't know what will. And when he put it like that, it woke me up in like even a newer way back then. So, yeah, it's just an amazing thing that I didn't ask for, but it's kind of put into my lap. And I'm just so grateful for it.
So how did that experience eventually lead to becoming a priest?
Yeah, you know, when I started going back to church regularly, it was kind of funny. It was I think at the beginning of Lent, you know, mm-hmm. we had the great compline service, and it was like the priest and two other people and myself, and the chanter didn't show up. And okay. So the priest points to me and he says, "You are chanting." And I never chanted before in my life. I didn't know what I was doing. But then I started like joining the chanters after that. And then I started kind of getting involved in the services, and I served in the altar, and, you know, one thing led to another, started teaching Sunday school. And then I got hired on as the youth director while I was finishing out my college education at the time. And so I worked, you know, full time there for about a year. And I saw the behind the scenes, what the priests actually did. And I said, this is what I need to do. This is where I need to be. And so after that, I went to seminary with the bishop's blessing, and you know, it's been about just over 10 years as a priest now.
Where did you go to seminary?
St. Vladimir's.
Yeah, just like me, baby.
So you didn't serve in the altar as a boy, like a young?
No, I didn't go into the altar the first time. I think I was maybe 22 years old, 23 years old for the first time, you know, and just, just kind of hanging out. So I was an altar man, not an altar boy.
Well, yeah, that's like me too. I remember when I first served in the altar, Father Ted was still in Winnipeg. And that weekend, I think my wife, she wasn't my wife at the time, but she was away for the weekend with one of her friends to the States somewhere. And Father Ted had messaged me, why don't you come serve in the altar or something like that, I remember. And I remember that's how that started. So yeah, it was interesting. Cause when I was a tonsured reader, it was with two other like young boys. Right. So I'm like 28 or whatever I was. And it was like, and it's funny because they were like my Sunday school students or I eventually ended up teaching Sunday school for high school kids. So they were still younger than that. So it was like me and some young kids, and now they're university students. So it's pretty funny.
Wow. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Father Michael, I had a question I wanted to jump in. You said that your family's from Nazareth. Have you been to Nazareth yourself?
I have. When I was 7 years old, I went on a trip with my father. We spent 3 months in Palestine, not just Nazareth. We went to Jerusalem, Bethlehem. We saw all the sites associated with our Lord's life on earth. And I was too young to appreciate it, but old enough to remember it. And so I still have these pictures of these places in my mind. And I would love to take my kids as well one day.
Yeah, I've been there twice. When I was 16, and then I took a trip when I was actually in Winnipeg, when Father Thomas was one of my parishioners. I took a trip in 2012.
And beautiful.
Went back. So yeah, it's an amazing place. So it was interesting to see that you're from there, and also you've actually been able to go back, because a lot of people haven't had the chance.
Oh, thank God. Yeah, I'm thankful for it. I hope to go again soon. Hopefully, once all this mess is over, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Father Michael, what's your parish like? Because the Antiochians are known, at least, like, for using a lot of English and not having a lot of
I guess my parish is about one third people who are immigrants, mostly from Syria. We got some Lebanese and Palestinian as well, but they've been here for like 40 years, you know, so they speak English. One third are their growing children and grandchildren, you know. Now they're born and raised in this country. And then the other third are just converts from different backgrounds. Either they married somebody who was Orthodox and converted, or they just found it on their own. So we use primarily English in our services. I try to be pretty open like that. And yeah.
And how did you get into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Yeah, you know, I've been interested in martial arts most of my life. So yeah. Like when I was a little kid, maybe like 10 years old, I started taking Kung Fu, did that for a little bit. But it was really in between like middle and high school where I really got into it. I was kind of a small kid growing up, you know, skinny, short. And so I got bullied a lot in middle school. And then in between 8th and 9th grade, I got signed up for karate by my parents. And like that changed everything. I got stronger and, you know, my confidence went up. And I was just immersed in that world for my entire high school time. Like I competed, I did some full contact karate, like that was my life. And then I got out of school and, you know, went into the military in college and got married in seminary. Life kind of got in the way. So I didn't really train for all those years. And I had always known about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Like I grew up watching the UFC. I knew who Royce Gracie was. You know, we tried to imitate some of his moves, you know, when we were training in my garage you know, I would just wrap my legs around somebody and say, yeah, this is the guard. And that's all I knew about it, right? Yeah. And, you know, so I was familiar with the basic concept of what it was. I knew its effectiveness, but just never had the funds or the time or the place to train until I got here to Fort Wayne. And then I got my kids. I wanted to get my sons. I have twin boys. They're about 9 years old at the time. I wanted to get them involved in martial arts. They were experiencing some kind of teasing, bullying in school. I wanted to give them what I didn't have at that age so early. So we signed them up for karate. They did that for about 2 years. And then I started kind of getting a bug. I wanted to get back into it, right?
Yeah.
And then I started taking some trial lessons at their school with the adult classes. I tried out like one other karate school in the area. But, you know, like it wasn't the experience I was looking for. It was just a repetition of the same thing that I kind of did all those years ago. It wasn't new. It wasn't, except for the physicality of it, it wasn't, you know, challenging and new and, you know, something that I was looking for really. I wanted something else. So I started looking around and I noticed, hey, we've got a Gracie Academy here in Fort Wayne. And, you know, the head instructor there, Chet Scammahorn, I mean, he trained with like Corey and Gracie. He spent time with Helio Gracie. Like, that's about as close to the source as you're going to get these days to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And it's, you know, I said, let me try it out there. So I had to work my guts up a little bit to walk in there. Because you hear these horror stories, right? Like, you just step on the mat and you get smashed your first day. Like, you don't know what to expect. And so this is July 2018, I think I started there. And then or 2019 rather. And then I walked into the academy and like, they were so chill. They were so cool. So welcoming. No ego at all going on there. And, you know, I started training and they have like a beginner program where they kind of, you can jump in at any time and, you know, learn the fundamentals of jiu-jitsu. And I just fell in love with it. I was like, this is what I was looking for. And so I started training there. A couple months later, I brought my sons over, got them involved in their kids class, and been there ever since. It's been great.
I like that. So what's your, before we were recording, you had mentioned what's your current rank then?
Yeah, I'm what they call a combatants belt, which is kind of, it's unique to the Gracie Academy system. Yep. It's like a stage in between white and blue. So I finished white belt, but not quite ready for blue. So they put you, it's a white belt with a blue stripe running down the length of it, basically.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah.
Because of Hicks and Gracie, Henner and Heon introduced that belt.
Yeah, yeah. So we're like affiliated with their academy, basically. Yeah. So it's kind of like a nice sweet spot where I'm still not skilled enough to like have everyone like really push me too much, but
yeah,
you know, but at the same time, I'm still kind of like able to learn and you know, kind of be open to what the higher belts are starting to do now. You know.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
So you said your boys do that as well?
Yeah, I got my sons involved in it. They have like what they call a bully-proof program.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're really helping the kids learn to deal with confrontations without having to resort to using jiu-jitsu. But then they give them the confidence that, hey, if you need to, you've got this skill set now. And, yeah, it's been great. So they're really, really good about kind of pushing that de-escalation of confrontation and not using it as much force as maybe some people might choose to use, just yeah, minimum force to kind of put it to a stop.
So it's good. Do you still have them in karate?
No, we pulled them out of karate. I felt like it wasn't as effective for a self-defense situation as I once may have thought it was, you know, not that it can't be. Mm-hmm. You know, I think karate is a great martial art, and if you really are dedicated to it, you can be effective in defending yourself. But the way most schools are working with the kids programs, I think that they give them a little bit of, I don't want to say false confidence, but I don't think it's as effective as they might believe it to be in an actual situation. You know?
Yeah.
So I felt like I had to pull them out. Yeah.
I hear that a lot. And that's my position as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, what about your wife? Does she train yet?
She does it. I've been trying to get her into it, man. You know, and like, you know, she'll let me like kind of like show her a couple of, you know, things here and there, just because I want her to know something, you know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she's just so busy with school right now and just raising kids and stuff. She's just like, it's just not her thing. But mm-hmm. you know, she gives me the time to do it with something, and the kids time to do it. So that's as much as I can ask for. I think, and it's good.
Yeah, maybe she likes it, gives her time to herself. I remember before I went to seminary, when me and my wife, we had a condo downtown. And so if I wouldn't train, she'd be like, aren't you going to train today? So she would train like every day. So she'd be like, had her own time after work, right? So,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's good now to get the kids out there. She it gives her a break when I get the boys out. Because right now we're going to the private lessons. So I take them with me.
Okay.
And they do their class, and then I back up right after theirs. And so she gets about an hour and a half to herself, which is good. Yeah.
How do your parishioners know?
Some of them know. Yeah. I mean, I've mentioned it here and there, you know, sometimes I'll use it like, you know, to illustrate something in a sermon, but you know, and it's worked sometimes, you know, but yeah, I don't talk about it too much in the parish.
Mm-hmm. I see.
So thank you, Father, for giving us a little bit of background there on both your religious background and also how you got into BJJ. I totally identify with, you know, your family, because like you said, you have three kids. Two of them are training with you, the twins. I have twins as well. All three of mine train as well. So it's a fun thing to have the family kind of like growing and experiencing the the art form with you. You know, you're learning yeah. them. So it's, do you find that it bonds you? Like, you know,
it does. Yeah. Yeah. You know, we get this time just in the car driving to and from class, and I get to watch them train. They get to watch me train, and we sometimes roll in the house a little bit. And yeah, I think it's a good connection between us.
Sure. Yeah. It builds like a camaraderie. Like, it's always good. You know, all parents want to have something to do with their kids. You know, the proverbial go throw the ball with your son.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But we go choke each other out. So it's
that's the thing. You know, like every dad wrestles with their sons, and I think, you know, but now like my kids kind of wrestle back. And
yeah.
And
yeah.
It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah. It's a good. My son comes up behind me. He's almost 9. He gets a rear naked choke on me. I'll tell you. I got a tap. He's really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's dangerous. Right. So like, and he sneaks up on me. So it's, yeah, no, it's a good thing. well, Father, you know, in this segment, we wanted to discuss a little bit about, our theme today, which is like preparation, for feasts and also for jiu-jitsu. And, you know, we just, as I said in the introduction, we've kind of just come out of this very tiring period for, at least for Orthodox priests. Because, you know, for Orthodox priests, you had mentioned that when you kind of got back involved in your faith and you actually started seeing what we actually do now, right?
Right.
So cool. Like, that's a lot of work, right? So it's a lot of services yeah. and a lot of preparation. But even for the average Orthodox Christian, you know, we have this concept of, you know, fasting and feasting. You know, this yeah. this kind of, and I would say it's mandatory. Like a lot of people, the Orthodox, we have this horrible, especially the cradle Orthodox, right? We have this horrible... kind of, you know, what's the word, perception. Yeah, that's the word of, sure. That, you know, fasting's optional, you know, it's just kind of like, yeah, if you do it, you do it. If you don't, whatever. Right.
Yeah.
Christmas
yeah.
is still going to come whether I fast or not. Right. Easter's still yeah. going to come. But, you know, going with that, I have found that that's also true even in jiu-jitsu. Like, yeah, you know, your class is going to come and go, you know, or if you sign up for a competition, yeah, you're going to go, but the amount of preparation you put into it yeah. is really going to affect your experience of the event. Right. So, like for myself personally, I can say that, at least as jiu-jitsu goes, and how it really kind of drove it home as far as, how the preparation really affects our experience of a spiritual event. When I started jiu-jitsu about over a year ago, you know, I was like 60 pounds heavier. I wasn't paying attention to my diet. I wasn't really doing any type of exercise outside of jiu-jitsu. And whew, it was horrible. It was like just, you know, yeah. I was flopping around on the ground and I couldn't move. And as the time has gone by and I've paid more attention to my preparation, just my daily preparation, you know, like what I put in my body, like how much exercise I do outside, strength training, things like that. I find that that's directly translated into my, not only my ability on the mats, but also my enjoyment of it. You know, sure. it's not like just a survival.
Right.
I'm getting smashed. It's like, it's a little better now, you know, I have a little more tools under my belt. Yeah. Right. So, and, I don't know. I think a lot of Orthodox Christians, I don't know what your opinion is of that as an Orthodox priest. I think a lot of Orthodox Christians would benefit from a greater preparation for their feast days.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny you said that, Father. Like, I was reading Father Alexander Schmemann's For the Life of the World this morning, just for my own study, you know, and I came across something he wrote in there. And he said, the feast is impossible without the fast. And like that's it right there, you know? I mean, I think the preparation is vital. You know, yesterday in church, for example, we had the Sunday before Epiphany, and, you know, we hear this St. John the Forerunner, the Baptist, make straight the way of the Lord, prepare his way, you know, he's saying. And I think that translates so great to the feasts, you know. We've got this whole cycle of these feast days in our church. And, you know, when it comes to like Lent and Pascha, that's what most people think of, I think. And then we can extend that to the Nativity, Advent, and all that. Like, we start out Lent, and for those who fast, like, you're excited the first couple of days, you know, you're kind of, I can do this, you know. Then you get about 3 weeks into the fast, right? You know how it is. You're tired of going to church. You're tired of fasting. But then what does that fast do? I start to remember and look forward to Pascha, right? I remember what it was like last year when we got there. I remember the joy of it. I look forward to that same experience, and so that gives me strength to move forward. And then what I find kind of what you said with you know, working out and eating right and then going to jiu-jitsu and how that kind of helps you enjoy the experience better. Same thing in the church. I think when you prepare with fasting, prayer, all this stuff that we do, you know, repentance, everything, asceticism, when you get to the feast, it's going to come regardless, as people say, but your experience of it is fuller. Yes. I think because you've been contemplating it with mind and the body for X number of weeks. And so when you get there, you're just like, it fills you. And so for me, it's the difference between being filled with the celebration and joy of the feast to just kind of experiencing it superficially. Yeah. So I think that's where preparation comes in for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned the beginning of Great Lent, for example. Like you said, by the third week, man, the Greeks are worse. The Greeks usually just say, I'm only going to fast the first week and the last week, right?
Yeah.
That's like the classic average Greek approach. I don't know how it is with the Antiochians, right?
Same thing, man. Same
yeah,
thing.
Like, you know, I'll do the first week and then I'll go back to my old habits. And I would say, well, like, that doesn't really do anything because, yeah, okay, it's better than nothing.
Obviously. Yeah.
But you have this, like, these 4 weeks in between where there's just, like, you know, just, you know, there's no effort whatsoever. Sure. And you kind of, you don't really get the same benefit. It's this kind of buildup. And this appreciation,
right.
Or you know how some people we have in the Orthodox tradition, some people they'll do like a 3-day fast in the first 3 days of Great Lent,
right.
And then usually that starts, you know, if you're really kind of go the old school, you know, it starts with like Sunday night, you know, with forgiveness vespers, and then the first time you eat something would technically be Holy Communion on Wednesday night at pre-sanctified, right?
Right.
You know, if you do that, not everybody has to do that, but if you do that 3-day, like nothing, you're not eating anything, maybe you have a little bit of water. You know, Holy Communion is a different experience.
Sure it is.
Yeah. On that 3 days later, on that Wednesday night, like it's just, it's really, it's a very, it's not just, the word is not gratifying. It's, like, I think it's, you said it correctly. It's like, it's a fulfillment that you don't really experience. And it's not just a physical thing because you're hungry, but just kind of like this idea of overall spiritual nourishment, because you're just focusing on that one spiritual, you know, food that you're going to get. As opposed to everything else. And it's just, it's a hyper-focus, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know. Yeah. It's just, I haven't done it every single year. But the years that I do that first day, the 3 days of fast, it's really beneficial. It's kind of like really kickstarts your whole experience. Yeah. And I find that you do it, like, it's also the more you do it, the fasting, the feasting. Cause like you said, most people only know about Great Lent and Pascha, Easter.
Yeah.
And or they might know about the Nativity, although a lot of people are like, "Oh, really? We fast for 40 days for the Nativity?"
Yeah, exactly.
But then you also have the Apostles' fast. Then you also have, like, you know, the Dormition fast in the summer. Then you have little mini fasts, you know, like the cross and things like that. So, you know, we got this rhythm of up and down. And if you only do it once a year, I find your recovery time, just like in working out, is much longer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you
it's
noticed?
Hard to get like, into it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like people fast, like just they give all their efforts to Lent, and then after that, they go off the rails again. Right. It's just like.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
I don't want to fast for another year. Right. Like.
Yeah. You feel like that, but then, like, honestly, like after, like, say you get to Pascha, for example, and then, like, you know, you have the liturgy, and then everybody pigs out after that. Like after about a day or two of just eating, I want to go back to fasting sometimes, you know, and I miss the services. I miss all that preparation afterwards. And you start to look forward to it again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like this, you feel run down after because your body is clean, right?
Yeah.
And I noticed that too. Like when I first started training jiu-jitsu, there was like the recovery time at the beginning because I was out of shape and I was out of breath. I was sore. And it just took me days and days just to recover from like the first session, right?
Yeah.
The joints, I couldn't walk right. I couldn't get out of the car. I felt so
right.
bad.
Right.
I couldn't get out of the car when I got home after jiu-jitsu. but now it's like, yeah, you go, you roll, and you're tired, but you feel great. Like you just, you reset, right? And it's the same thing in the spiritual life. The more you do it, it's like, okay, you go through 40 days of Christmas fast, and then you have the feast and you pig out a bit and you enjoy, but then like by the next week, you're back on that Wednesday and Friday fasting. You're back on the horse, right?
Yeah.
And it's easier. It's easier, I guess, to get back into the rhythm.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I don't follow Thomas. Like you came, you have a unique perspective on this too, because you know, you came into it not as a cradle Orthodox, but converting later in your life, in your 20s, so you never had that rhythm, and then suddenly now you're imposing that rhythm on yourself. And at the same time, you were starting jiu-jitsu. The same year that you got baptized was the same year that you started jiu-jitsu. I think that was the same year?
Yes, 2011.
So you suddenly you went from like no structure, at least that type of structure, and then suddenly you imposed it. So how was that experience for you?
It's like there's like a learning curve, because when you're new to the faith, you want to go. But my personality would go really hard. Like, you know, I fast really hard. And so when you start training, then I lost a lot of weight that I shouldn't have been losing for my size, right? So you can over prepare for things that can
directly
affect you as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think you need to be aware of that. But it's interesting right now. There is someone who's interested in the faith, and he's been communicating with me, and so he's bringing up, he's going through this thing now as well. He's getting the structure of the Wednesday and the Friday fast. So it's I think it's nice. It's especially when you, like you said, all the mini fasts. So it's the seasonal fast and the mini fast, and then the weekly, right? The whole, it's like you know, people train for, let's say, for lifting weights or anything, like periodization, right? So it's like the church does it for you. Your training schedule is periodized for you, and so if you follow it, it's leading you to something, obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's once you understand all the cycles, the daily cycle, the church's prayer, the weekly cycle, then all the fasting cycles. It's a very beautiful experience.
It's like it builds momentum.
Yeah,
like that's the feeling that I get. Like, kind of bringing it back to the secular side, right? Like just working out. Like, so I do intermittent fasting, right? So I have a schedule where I get up in the morning and it's like I start eating at 7 a.m. and by 3 p.m. it's like an 8-hour window and I can eat. And then from 3 p.m. until 7 the next day, 16 hours, I don't eat, right? And so that's really good for me, for my personal, because I don't want, you know, if I eat late, it's a disaster, right? So I don't, so I cut all that out and I feel good. And so it's this rhythm, and you get into this rhythm and you have, you know, you got to get up in the morning, you got to take your vitamins, you got to make sure you eat a certain amount of calories and time. And it's kind of, you have this rhythm. Once you lose that rhythm, so like sometimes on the weekends, I'll stop fasting because it's just, the weekends are crazy. You know, we got liturgy, we got all this stuff, the system, the whole program is kind of mixed up a bit. So on the weekends, there could be like 2 days of the week where I don't fast. That really messes up my whole schedule. Like it messes up my momentum. It messes up my rhythm. It's still hard to get back. Like I get back into it on Monday, but it's almost like I wish I didn't have to break that momentum.
Yeah.
It's just, it affects your body. It affects your mind. It affects your mood. Right. And it's the same thing in the church. Like, you know, people sometimes, you know, you'll have years where you have a really good rhythm, you've done all the kind of, you know, predominantly you've done all the fasts as best you can, you've kind of stuck to a schedule, and then maybe you go off the rails for a bit.
Yeah.
And you don't fast for like, it ends up being 6 months, right? Let's say,
Yeah,
Father, you know, I haven't done it. And then it's really hard to get back into it.
Yeah, for sure. I totally feel that, Father. You know, like I'm such a structured individual just in my own life. I mean, I kind of always been that way. And then when I joined the Marines, it like reinforced that for the rest of my life. And so like, I have to have schedules about my life, just like a daily schedule, weekly, monthly, yearly. And so, you know, what we do in the church with these kind of seasons, it provides that for me in a lot of ways, you know, where I can look forward to something. I know what I have to do to prepare myself for it, to feast or whatever's coming up, you know, that translates to jiu-jitsu. You know, I have my training schedule and my workout schedule, whatever. And then, yeah, like you're saying, there's times where you don't do that. Like if I'm traveling, for example, or, you know, I'm taking my wife out for a dinner date or something, and I get off like my normal diet, for example. I'm kind of feeling like off afterwards. I want to get back into it. I want to do it again. And it happened this year with like the church, with the whole COVID thing, you know, we basically shut down from March until June. You know, we were still doing services, but it was like a skeleton crew.
Yeah.
And we're just doing it virtually. And so I can just imagine like how the people, like they're having to watch this on their computer screens. They don't get the experience of participating. They have like a week of Lent and then nothing until like the middle of June, no Pascha, none of these services. It broke the rhythm for them. And so it's heartbreaking and for people to do that. And it's hard for us to get reestablished after that. And that's kind of our struggle here right now is getting people to reconnect as we're slowly opening up, you know. That's the hard thing, to get them back into the rhythm of the church's life and the preparation of the feasts. That's the fight right now.
Sure. Yeah. Father Thomas, you mentioned something actually that I found was interesting, and maybe you could elaborate just a little bit. You said that when you first started, you know, you can overtrain, right? And we know that, yes, especially physically, like in jiu-jitsu too, you see people train too much, they get injuries, right? They burn out. What would you, I guess, could you give an example of what kind of over, is there such a thing as over prepping for feasts in the church? Like, are there extremes that we need to be careful of? Like, what would that look like? in the spot here now.
Yeah, I'd say over, for me personally, I think it's really hard to overtrain in jiu-jitsu. I think a lot of people who think they overtrain, they don't. They just don't train enough to let their body adapt to that level. Because when you see other people who train more, then you see it's like, no, you can train way more. You just have to watch your sleep. But preparing for fasting, let's say, I think you can overtrain or overprepare for that. But if you strictly try and follow like a monastic fasting pattern, right? If you go really hard that way, then you will definitely be losing weight that that you don't need to be losing, right? And it's out of context too, because if you follow a monastic fasting schedule, and when you live in the world, in a parish church, the monastic fasting schedule exists because it's taking place in a monastery, right? So you have each monk has his job, you know. So you have the cooks, you have the cleaners. So it's an organic whole. So when you're trying to follow that strict in the world, well, who's going to do all those? So you still have to do all those things, unless your wife does it for you or something. Like,
you have multiple tasks. Yeah.
Yeah. Multiple tasks. And then it can be detrimental to your health, and it can be distracting from what the point of the fast is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And perhaps even like the missing the whole spirit of the fast, that, you know, like we always say, like we have sometimes some old people that will come to the church in the morning and they'll say, oh, you know, I didn't take my pills this morning because, you know, I didn't want to drink water because I want to take communion. It's like, that's kind of missing the point of the fast, right? Like if you have pills you need to take because you're sick.
And they pass out in the church and you got to call the ambulance.
Yeah, well, which has happened multiple times in my church, you know, because somebody didn't want to take their pills. So it's like kind of like focusing on the letter of the law. And missing the whole point of like the proper preparation. And people do that with health as well, right? Like they starve themselves because they want to, you know, hit a certain, let's say, weight or something, right? But it's not healthy because they're not eating nutritiously, they're not exercising, they're not counterbalancing, you know, they're minimizing their calories with other things, right? So it's anywhere, I think, if you fall into the extremes, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you're reminding me of something when he said that, Father, you know, I had a professor in seminary, and you can probably guess who I might be talking about. We can maybe chat on it later. But he once said to our class, he said, if it's Catholic Easter, but it's like Orthodox middle of Lent, right? Sometimes it happens that way, right? Mm-hmm. And your Catholic friends invites you over to his house and puts a big piece of steak in front of you. You had better eat that steak or don't bother coming to my chalice on Easter Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. So you get so legalistic with the fast. Some people will do that. You know, they'll let it overrule the rule of love, you know?
Yes.
And it's not one or the other. It's both and, you know? But, you know, if you get so focused on just the regimen of it and you neglect mercy and love and all these other things, then you're defeating the purpose of it, you know? And you can overdo it on one extreme, and then you're actually failing when you think about it. So that came to mind when you said that.
Well, sure. Like I had one of my friends that I was actually rolling with yesterday. You know, he was telling me, that, and he's a pretty muscular, fit person.
Right.
And he said that, you know, he remembers when he first started competing in jiu-jitsu. He's not a Christian. When he first started competing, you know, he was trying to cut weight so he could make his weight class and he could fight. And then he realized very quickly that, you know, he cut weight, sure, but he was so weak when he got to the point like to fight that he didn't perform very well in the competition because he just didn't have the energy. He was not in a good physical condition just because he cut enough pounds to be in that weight class. So he said, you know, the next time around, he said, you know what, I'd rather just fight in the heavier weight class and be healthy and enjoy it and just be competitive and not be sick. And sure, it's harder. You got to fight guys who are a little bit heavier than him, but it's also healthier, right? And it's just so it's finding that balance between, you know, well, what is the goal here, right? Is you have to have like a holistic approach to your health, right? Spiritual health, right? And physical health, right?
Right, absolutely.
All right, everyone. So we're coming to our final thoughts of the show today with Father Michael Sacrin from Indiana, from Fort Wayne, and Father Thomas talking about preparation, fasting, and feasting, how that also applies to the jiu-jitsu world, to the training world. And I don't know. I think I'm going to start today because usually I ask our guests to start. But I had a thought. I was actually this past Sunday, which, as Father Michael said, was our Sunday before the Epiphany. Of course, this episode will be airing much later than this, so after Epiphany has come and gone. But you know, I was speaking in my sermon about this, and you know, we're in a lockdown here, and because of that, we are only allowed very limited amounts of people inside the church, only 10 at any given time, which is kind of like the staff plus like two or three parishioners, right? And so a lot of people had asked me, and I said this in my sermon. I said, you know, they said, oh, you know, Father, usually Epiphany, it's like, I'm not used to like this situation. I'm used to like, you know, getting ready for the feast and fasting. And, you know, we usually fast for Epiphany to receive communion and also to receive the great holy water from the great blessing of the waters. And, you know, I'm not gonna be able to go this year. So is there a point in prepping, right? And my response was, and it's along the lines of what we were discussing today, and I guess in my final thought, is that I said, of course you have to continue to prep. Even if like you can't feast like you feasted before. You know, because the rhythm is important as well. So even if we can't go to church, even if I can't take communion this year at Epiphany, of course, people can still come by and get the holy water and bless their homes, even though the priest can't come to your home this year because we can't travel to different homes. Right. People will have to bless their own homes. But even with that, even though we don't have kind of like the full enjoyment of the feast, I guess you could say, it's still important to do the prep, to do that preparation, because to lose that, it's like what we were talking about before. To lose that prep is to kind of push us out of that rhythm of prayer in the church. And that's very, very dangerous, especially during this COVID time where a lot of people have kind of fallen completely out of that rhythm. And if they can't maintain at least a semblance of that at home, in the home church, as we say, then, you know, you can really go off the rails. And we see now we're coming up to like a year of almost lockdown in most places of this pandemic. And so if you lose a whole year of your spiritual life and any type of semblance of prayer and fasting, it's like losing, again, a year of working out, a year of eating right. Like, can imagine how detrimental, and it's happened to a lot of people. We know a lot of people have got the COVID belly, right? and so I think at least my final thoughts is that, yeah, the preparation is important even when there isn't a feast.
Yeah, absolutely.
About that, guys.
I'd echo all that, Father. I mean, when I think of preparation, like we're talking about jiu-jitsu, I try to go back to something I think Henry Gracie once said. He said, if you constantly prepare for worst-case scenarios, there are no more worst-case scenarios. So, like, we know how that works with martial arts, jiu-jitsu. You know, you're training either for competition or for self-defense. So, like, if you end up in a bad position, you know how to get out of it and take care of yourself. And I think the preparation of the church works in a lot of the same way, because ultimately where are we all headed is I'm experiencing as much as we can on this side of heaven, the kingdom of God. And then one day I'm going to die one day. And that's like the ultimate place where the rubber meets the road. When you see how a Christian approaches their death and then how they face the little deaths that we live through every day, all the struggles and the suffering and the things we have to deal with, pandemics and this and that. I find that in the preparation for that, that's where I grow the most. That's where I get the biggest sense of, you know, I'm able to handle this and, you know, I'm able to survive this pressure, and then I can move forward and experience the fulfillment of whatever's coming at the end, whether it's my entry into the kingdom of God or, you know, getting through a hard role or God forbid a self-defense situation, something like that. And then you can experience it to the fullest. So for me, the preparation, whether we're talking about jiu-jitsu or fasting or, you know, spiritual life, is all about being aware of what's to come, expectant of it, so that you can participate fully of it. And so that's why the preparation is not optional, as we said at the beginning. It has to be, something has to be there to make this time different for you. And that sanctifies the time and makes it so much more beautiful to have that experience in the end. So that's my final thought on that.
Sure. Father Thomas?
I think Father Michael said it well. Like, you just have to be prepared all the time. That's what I think. You're just, whether it's for jiu-jitsu or the spiritual life, I think it's important to always be prepared. Because you never know what's going to happen. Well, in the church, we know what's going to happen. We know the cycle of feasts, but it's just always important to keep that rhythm and to not let external factors throw you off that rhythm, especially in the situation we find ourselves in now. I think it's really important.
Sure. And like you said, especially in the situation that we find ourselves now, you know, we have this global pandemic, and really, you know, you really see the kind of training that people have had, whether it be spiritual training, psychological training, physical, you know, jiu-jitsu training. It all comes into play when you have to deal with adversity. And you see people have handled it somewhat better than others, depending on what their background is. And I would say, you know, at least in my jiu-jitsu community here in the club, the people who are involved have handled it much better than people who are not physically active, people who are not, who do not train. Like, people are just pretty down to earth. You know, they're pretty centered. There's not a lot of anxiety, right? I have found this amongst people who train jiu-jitsu, and also people who are fairly spiritual. You know, they're, it's like, what will come will come, and we'll deal with it. And, you know, we have the skills to deal with it. So, yeah, definitely the preparation is as important, if not more important, than the actual feasting. Well, on that note, I think that's a good place to stop. And I wanted to thank Father Michael again for being with us today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Father.
And, thanks, Father.
Yeah, and we really hope to see you again, maybe on a future episode. Stay safe where you are. Enjoy the rolling, since you guys still have it down there. with your wonderful children, your family, and hopefully we will talk to you again in the near future.
Thanks, Fathers. All the best to both of you.
Thanks for being here.
God bless.
Thank you. Again. Take care.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests, an independent podcast. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul. God bless.